One of the biggest challenges of the future is how we're going to feed the world's ever-increasing population. But where do you draw the line about what's acceptable to eat? In some parts of the world, food that you or I wouldn't consider touching is part of the regular diet. Take dog or even cat meat, for example. Chef Simon Bryant's recently been to China to see what's going on for himself, and it's left him feeling, well, a bit uneasy. Simon's probably best known to you as the former co-presenter of the ABC's The Cook and the Chef, alongside Maggie Beer, and he's stepped away from the kitchens at the Hilton in Adelaide, where he's executive chef, to join me now. Welcome to Life Matters, Simon.
Thanks for having me, Richard. How are you?
I'm really well. Now, before we begin, I should mention that some of what we're going to talk about may be distressing for some people, especially if you're listening with young kids. But that aside, it's important that we know what's happening. So tell me about your visit to the dog and cat meat markets in China.
Yeah, Richard, it is just a little bit distressing, and that's probably why I put this trip off for so long and hid in my little kitchens at the Hilton. But I thought I'd bite the bullet, and I took quite a lengthy route through China and ended up in Ganzhou down the bottom, and that was probably one of the harder bits for me the day of the dog meat markets. My best mate's a Doberman, Richard. I don't know if you know my mate Iggy. He goes everywhere with me, and I've been sort of really anxious about this visit, but I thought I better go. And the reason I wanted to go, I guess, is because I always felt that it was a complex issue and I didn't want to take a cultural sort of moral high ground on it.
Mm.
But yeah, having been back and things are starting to settle in my mind, I have to say, I feel very differently than I did before I left, that's for sure.
All right. Well, let's talk about some specifics. Where do the dogs come from?
Well, that's one of the problems. I was under the impression that a lot of the dogs were specifically bred for the meat markets, but there's a lot of collars. I'd say about 30% of collars on these dogs, which leads you to believe that either you've got a problem with stolen pets or you've got a council and legislation management problem with dogs, which I did find out later is a fact.
Mm.
So not all of these animals are specifically bred for the dog markets. There are dogs that are obviously have been around people, you can tell.
And what sort of conditions are the animals in?
Yeah, that's probably a real concern to me as a chef, and one of the things that I was struggling with, because the dogs were in really bad condition, and I'll explain that in a minute. But the reason that there's a live dog trade is that, you know, Chinese chefs are very well known for demanding the freshest produce. You go to a Chinese restaurant here, Richard, and you see the fish in beautiful condition, fresh,
mm,
in tanks. And I thought part of the rationale behind the dog markets was the freshness of the meat. But honestly, these animals are in the worst condition as livestock that I've ever seen, because they were dehydrated. And then the real problem, that they were stressed out of their brains, because they're in tiny cages. And I'm not talking about a cage that they can walk in. They're in flat cages and high-rised, one on top of each other. But you've got a pack animal. And it's basically, you know, as you know from dogs, they're incredibly hierarchical.
Mm.
And so you've got a lot of stress in those cages. And then really the problem that I saw is you've got a lot of awareness. If you go to, you know, if I go to a beautiful free-range pig farm here, I acknowledge that the animal's going to end up on a plate, but it's actually in fairly good condition and wandering around and having a bit of a fun. But there, honestly, the level of awareness that the animal had about what was going on was pretty terrifying.
It seems, when you say, because you just said, reminded us that if you go to a good Chinese restaurant, you'll see, you know, that the fish are in the tank and you can see how fresh everything is. It's in good condition. The last thing that you would think that a cook or a chef in China would want would be a stressed animal.
And that's where the real problems lie. And this is a bit of a cultural issue, I guess, and a bit of an education issue, that there's still a belief that if the animal is, well, I mean, I'll say it like it is. If the animal's tortured it has a better flavour. So there's no concern for the welfare of how that animal's kept before the kill. And the kill can be incredibly brutal because there's a belief that the adrenaline through the meat improves the flavour, which is the absolute opposite of what chefs believe as a principle, that the animal must be very relaxed.
Mm.
It must be well brought up and not stressed because of the quality of the product that you're going to get by doing that. And that's the whole positive argument for free-ranging and ethical kill methods. And I'm a believer in that with fish, with livestock in general.
So, I mean, I don't want to dwell too much on the horrific part of this, although it is horrific. But how are the animals killed then?
Well, there's a variety of methods, Richard. There's a lot of footage, and I always thought that footage on the, you know, on the internet was probably the most extreme example, but unfortunately it's not. Quite often it's a stab wound to the neck to bleed out, and it's not a quick process. There are particular methods where they're thrown in boiling water, much like we used to do with lobsters, you know, 30 years ago before people sort of started getting a little bit of an idea that that wasn't ethically sound. I guess the real concern is there's no control because a lot of the animals are sent out live to restaurants in these little crates, and then you've got all sorts of things going on in the back of the restaurants. So it's pretty bad. In fact, it's horrific.
Some of them are hit on the head with a blunt instrument.
Yeah, there's the bludgeoning that happens. I guess if I took you through it, if you bought the animal and you wanted it killed out of the market, they get some very long metal tongs, which are like big pliers, I guess. They go around the animal's neck, they drag it out of the cage, and most of the vendors there would bludgeon, followed by a neck stab. But it's not instantaneous. There's an element of, I mean, I have heard that some of the vendors, and I didn't see this, but some of the vendors will quite happily let the animal come back to consciousness a couple of times because it's believed that that would improve the flavour. The disturbing thing is that, you know my dog can sense if I'm a little bit upset. These animals are actually visually looking at what's going on, and you know they have dogs have a level of awareness, as do cats, of their surroundings, and the level of distress for the rest of the animals is incredible because they can see it.
Now, Simon, I have to say, I really have to say this before I ask you the question. I'm not a cultural relativist. I think this sounds to me like it's wrong, but there is an argument, isn't there, that it, you know, it's a cultural thing. For us in Australia to judge the way the Chinese do this.
Look, that was why I was one of the reasons I was a little bit reluctant to go. I'm, you know, pretty much thinking, okay, this is complex. It's economically complex, and then you've got your cultural complexities. But having seen it's not a cultural issue. There's universal wrongs. This is wrong. We've got a lot in Australia to be absolutely not proud of. Our factory chicken farming, our factory pig farming, both of which I endeavour not to buy. And I believe very much in demand-based economies, that it's not the producer's fault. They're just filling a demand. But this one, it's not viable. It's not about a culture criticising another one. I'm quite happily criticise my own culture and the way we raise some of our livestock. But I guess the problem for me, Richard, is you've got a carnivorous pack animal. It's not the ideal animal to farm. They stress. They're competition for protein in the food chain, so it doesn't make sense to feed an animal protein to produce protein. And there's no really, you know, before I went, Richard, I have to be honest, I thought, look, if there was a proper ethical way of doing this, I'd take that as a solution. But having seen it, I don't see how there is. I really don't.
On Life Matters today, my guest is Simon Bryant, who is probably best known to you as the chef from The Cook and the Chef, but his day job's the executive chef at the Hilton in Adelaide, and he is Animal Asia Foundation's ambassador for ending the dog and cat meat trade in Asia. I kind of have to ask, if it's unacceptable for this to be going on, why is it acceptable, and this must be something that you've grappled with yourself in your professional life, to kill some animals for food and not others?
Yeah, I mean, that's a complex issue. All life is valuable. All life is precious. Richard, I'd like to think in the future we don't have to kill any animals.
What, a vegetarian future?
Look, I believe it's viable. I really do. But I mean, we don't have the infrastructure for that right now. If you were to say tomorrow everyone has to be vegetarian or vegan, however far you want to take this argument, we don't have the infrastructure. We're too embedded in the protein chain that we've got. However, putting the value of one animal's life above the other is complex.
Mm.
But if you look at the practicalities of the ability to farm one animal compared to another and the impact it has on that animal's welfare, well-being and quality of life, you would put dogs and cats at the absolute worst end, because it's impossible to farm this animal without it feeling incredible distress. Whereas if you see a herd animal, I'll have to say, when I go to my suppliers, of which I've been to probably 80% of the suppliers I use, I can leave a farm which is a free-range pork or free-range chicken farm feeling quite comfortable with the process. I could not leave any of the dog farms or dog markets I saw feeling comfortable. I just couldn't.
You work, obviously, where you are at the Hilton, it's high-end, it's fine dining. It's the sort of place where people might want and expect to get milk-fed veal and foie gras.
Well, I won't serve foie gras. I won't buy battery eggs. I offer my customers free-range wherever possible. We have free-range bacon, we have free-range pork. There's a lot of controversial food. Shark fin's another one. The milk-fed veal, there's levels of that. I will serve veal. I'm not too keen on milk-fed veal. And I think it's important as a chef, get out there and look at your suppliers, see what they're doing. And my egg situation's probably the best example, that when I took over as exec chef, that was the first thing I wanted to do, is convert the hotel to free-range eggs. And believe me, we buy a lot of eggs. I've got a 5-chef pastry department, 2 restaurants and a big banqueting. Having seen caged egg farms, I visited them, I just thought, I can't buy this. I just can't do it. And then it's about economics. It's about convincing your customer that it's worth, and for me, I have to pay 2.5 cents more an egg, but I feel really comfortable doing that. And telling the story to your customers why you do that. And I guess you've got to draw a lot of lines in the sand, and foie gras, like you mentioned, is one I just won't do it. It's pointless.
Just recently on the telly, Jamie Oliver was shown killing an alligator that he planned to cook and eat during a trip to the US. He's doing this US show at the moment, and his line was that if I'm going to cook it, I should know how it's died. Has he got a point there?
Yeah, I agree with that argument that Jamie Oliver's saying, that we package stuff up and we don't want to know what the real product is. I think that it's fantastic that he's put that line forward, because that's the reality. We used to have to kill an animal to eat it, and you do that in a dignified way. You give that animal a dignified life and a dignified death if you choose to eat meat.
So you're arguing essentially for an engaged and ethical approach to eating, and that means knowing about where your food's from and how it's been treated.
Yeah, and it's not just the animal welfare issue. I mean, it's about when you buy an imported orange, because, you know, an orange is out of season and you decide you must have an orange, so you buy a Californian orange. I mean, that's ridiculous. Just wait 3 months till our oranges are back online.
I think the problem now is that many people no longer realise that fruit has seasons, because it's available. So many things are available all the time and people forget. But I want to wrap things up. And you went to China, as I mentioned, as an ambassador for Animals Asia. They are hoping that education may be the key to turning the situation around in that country.
Yeah. There's some real ground-level education programs. They got cute little names, Dr. Dog, Professor Paws. One angle is changing the perception of the population about what a dog is when it's in its finest form. And to me, its finest form is a companion animal. They have an incredible amount of love and empathy. So the project revolves around bulletproofing dogs, testing them to make sure that they're completely safe around people, And I went to the test days for Dr. Dog, and they poke and they bark at them and throw Kleenex boxes on the floor. Once they're certified as a Dr. Dog, then they go on hospital visits. And a lot of the people have never engaged with a dog as a companion animal. And a lot of the people are lonely. There's a lot of old people and they just need companionship. So it's about changing people's perception about what a dog is. And in that particular city, Ganzoi, they're regarded as food, and it's changing the perception.
Well, change has come in some countries already. I mean, Hong Kong and the Philippines and Taiwan, there has been a lot of progress in places like those.
Yeah, I absolutely commend the authorities in those countries for what they've done. And I guess the biggest problems is still China and Korea, which is another interesting one because they have conflicting views on what the meat actually does as far as medicine. So, you know, there's a little bit of a way to go.
Simon, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Richard.
A lot to think about there. That's Simon Bryant. He's executive chef at the Hilton in Adelaide. He's also the Animal Asia Foundation's ambassador for the campaign to end the dog and cat meat trades. And, well, if you're interested, you can find out more information via the Life Matters website. Actually, while you're there, what do you think? You might not like the idea of eating dog or cat. And, you know, I'm putting my hand up. I couldn't do it. But should it be banned in other cultures? Get in touch via the email or the guestbook at abc.net.au/rn/lifematters, or you can call the listener line on 02833 1430. This is Life Matters with me, Richard Addy. You're on ABC Radio National.